Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 6th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Chris.
Yes.
Have we ever talked about whether poker's a sport or not? I don't really think we have we?
I can never tell if you're being facetious.
I mean, we haven't talked about it any more than 80, 90 times, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's probably broken the century mark by how many times we've said it is or isn't a sport. But I know you're going somewhere with this. I can't wait.
We never really resolved that, right? I think we went back and forth, and I'm not going to reopen the whole discussion here, but... a lot of this stuff is decided in the court of public opinion, you know? If enough people keep calling poker a sport, then guess what? At some point it becomes a sport, whether it is or not, right?
Well, it all depends on your definition of the word sport. How you figure out if poker's a sport to you, personally.
You voted for Bill Clinton, didn't you?
Yeah, of course I did.
It all depends on...
6 times.
What's your, Oh, man. All right. Well, here's the reason I'm bringing it up today. I've never heard of this thing, this Bleacher Report. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
All right. Well, I've never heard of it, but it came up on Google Alert the other day, and they got a little guy there named Alex Kalos, and he wrote a column called The Top 10 Stupidest Sports on ESPN.
Stupidest.
And, of course, if I'm going to read a top 10 list, I'm a sucker for all top 10 lists, but when you put the word stupidest in it... I am gold. I am married there. And you actually came to the house the other day, and I was in the middle of reading. I'm like, hey, stay outside, buddy.
Yeah, you didn't let me in. I was like, all right, fine.
I'm only on 7 right now, so I got to get through this. Here's the good news, and maybe it's the bad news, too. I don't know. World Series of Poker, 4th on the list. So good news, hey, it's a sport. I mean, this Alex Kalos guy, who apparently is extremely smart because he works for Bleacher Report, right?
And he knows how to spell stupidest.
Exactly. You've got to be very smart to come up with a top 10 list. he seems to think that poker obviously is a sport. Of course, he's dissing it in the process. But hey, that's another a chink in the bedpost there for poker as a sport, right?
Yeah, he legitimizes us, so that's awesome.
Exactly, exactly. See, he thought he was putting us down. But really?
Really, he only reinforces our standing in the great sporting mecca.
He was only making us
ESPN.
Strong. Now,
who'd we beat?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Well,
who beat us?
Who beat us?
Yeah.
Probably more important, right? Because I'm like, oh, wait a minute. After I got over the whole being excited that we're a sport and then happy that we're a stupid sport, I'm like, wait a minute. We should be the stupidest sport, right? Poker should be always at the top of the list. I don't care what the list is. Third place, National Spelling Bee.
That was third place?
That was third.
How could that not be number one?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we'll get to the rest of the list here, and then we can debate that if you want. But,
okay.
But right now, this is what's great about this list, Chris. Right now, somewhere else in the world, 2 little homeschool kids with glasses are recording their Spelling Bee podcast, and they are giddy that the spelling bee is a sport now.
Oh, man.
And they probably have Aaron Andrews as a guest today. So, I mean, the joke's on us yet again. But National Spelling Bee, I mean, when I first thought of this, I mean, that was actually the first thing I thought of. I mean, you start to think of the things that shouldn't belong on ESPN.
Yeah.
And I always get a giggle when it's the spelling bee or the National Geography bee, which I was much better at.
The National Geography bee.
That's third. I mean, what's left, right?
Yeah.
All right, second, slow pitch softball.
Oh.
I have actually never seen this on ESPN. I'm surprised that it's graduated all the way to the big leagues.
I've seen it. The guys in the outfield, they have a keg.
Oh, see, that I would enjoy watching.
The pitcher has bottled beer. It's pretty wild.
Apparently, Chris, there's a rule in slow pitch softball that you can only hit so many home runs.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why this guy thinks it's stupid.
And they become outs if you hit more after that.
I had no idea. Yeah. Of course, I never hit a home run in my life. Got the home plate in anything. So that's second. First, the WNBA.
The WNBA is the most stupid sport. Actually, I should say is the stupidest sport on ESPN.
According to Alex Callis of the Bleacher Report.
Oh, that doesn't even make sense, man.
Isn't that wrong?
It's just wrong.
I mean, I'm not getting into a whole debate here. This is a poker podcast. We'll get back to the poker momentarily here, folks. But, I mean, that's just a cheap shot, I think.
That's just ridiculous.
I mean, we've taken our lumps here on Annie Up this last year for not being as sensitive to our female listeners as we should have. But I'm not going to go in. I mean, WNBA is a legitimate sport.
It's basketball. Regardless of who's playing it or what he thinks of their athletic ability, it's basketball.
Right.
This is crazy.
Real league, people pay money to go watch these things.
See, this
is stupid.
This guy just wants people to talk about him. It's a cry for attention.
I'm not going to give him what he wants.
We just did.
We're only going to talk about it for 10 minutes. And then we're going to move on.
Yeah, we won't give him his 15 minutes of fame. We're only going to give him his 4.8 minutes of fame. Hey, one thing glaringly off this top four list to me, cheerleading.
You know what? Cheerleading did not make anywhere on the top list.
How does that not make the
list?
It's on
thing.
ESPN all the time.
I'm sure this guy has a nickname because everybody writes his nickname. Alex Chauvinistic Callis. Because he's fine watching girls in skirts.
Hey, there's guys too, buddy.
Oh, well, okay.
I don't know if they're in skirts or not, but there's guys there.
Probably
somebody's
got
to throw him around.
he's fine watching. That's not stupid. But, you know, legitimate athletic women who could kick our asses at anything, that apparently is stupid.
Exactly. Yeah, this guy, man. You know what? His last name is appropriate. He's Callis.
Yes, there we go.
This man is Callis. All right, let's move on to some poker.
Now we're going
to
find out that he's a longtime listener, Manny Up, and I want some swag for this. All right, well, you know, it's not the World Series of Poker, Chris, and it's not yet on TV, but Apes is very important to our listenership. And, you know, gosh, dog darn it. I can get close, but I can never get the brass ring.
Sorry, buddy.
And particularly this year, I have just stank up Apes. And yes, I just invented the word stank. Because that's how bad I've played. But I finished eighth this time. I thought I was going to make it. This is a game that I hate, but I seem to fall like Kramer ass backwards into success in it. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But congratulations to X_T_LLaw_X, who won. Our good friend Don from North Carolina. Beat a guy named Monkey Boxes.
Yes.
Clearly on Alex Kalos's top 10 awesome poker names, Monkey Boxes.
I had these guys at my table to start, and they were tough. And it, you know, the problem with when it started was there were a bunch of people at my table who weren't at the table yet, you know, when I played, I mean, and because I only played for maybe 5 minutes. and so, you know, you were forced to play hands that you might not normally play or – you know, and like you said, I don't hate the game itself. I love the idea of Deuce of Seven, but it's so frustrating. It literally is more frustrating than Raz for me. And I constantly got dealt like 7-3-4 Deuce, and then like brick, and then you know you lose half your stack pushing it because you know somebody's drawing two and you're drawing one perfect, and then you make a nine, you stay pat, and they draw one in the end, and you check, they bet, and you have to call, and they make an eight. You know, it's so frustrating, that game. It drives me crazy. So
yeah, my favorite are the big blind guys that draw four, draw four, draw three, and win with a perfect seven
and bet into you.
Yeah,
and you're like, what? And that happens a lot. I mean, yeah. I couldn't believe how many times people would call a raise, and I mean, you know, that you want that at your table. You want people calling a raise and drawing four when you're drawing to a perfect. But you know, okay, so then you make a 10, and you're like, well, this guy's drawing three. I'm sticking with it, and then he makes an 8. You know, it's you can't win. So it was very frustrating. I don't know how the law did it. But he's going to tell us right now.
I'm thrilled to pick up the banana in the deuce to seven triple draw game. This continues my trend of winning with the bad cards after the banana I picked up last year in Raz. I want to congratulate Monkey Boxes. He sat to my right the entire tournament. I've never sat next to the same guy the whole way in a multi-table tournament and both end up heads up. He played a great game. I lucked out on the last hand, just tipped him by one to take the banana. It's always great to play with the nation. Can't wait to the next game.
Ah, so you guys will love the Monkey Boxes.
Yeah, love to the Monkey Box.
So I wonder if Monkey Boxes, created his name based off of apes.
He could have. He could have. You know, I've seen a lot of new anti-up names.
Yes.
You know, and it's cool. I love it. It's like an homage to us or whatever. And, you know, to know that you've given up your...
Cares about us. I mean, but they love the show.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, it's not us, but the show. And you know, and they we are the show, Scott, so it's okay to say that.
Well, okay, that's true.
It's the associative property.
Okay, I mean, 75-25.
They taught
you know,
that's algebra in freshman year in high school, you know. If show is equal to Chris and Scott, then Chris and Scott are equal to show... All right, our next event is Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern time, and it's my favorite game, Stud 8, which I flamed out in the free roll. Yet again, I wish I had forgotten about it.
I didn't even know you were in. I was looking earlier, and you didn't sign in, I didn't think, and it sounded like you had stuff to do, and then you're bugging me in the middle of this game where you got to keep track of the cards. You're sending messages about work. I mean, the nerve. And then I hear you. Oh yeah, I was out already. I'm like, oh my, what? You played? I even know you played.
I pushed one hand really, really hard because I knew if I hit it, I was gonna have a massive stack, and I could have just concentrated on work and gotten my seat. And it was like three handed, and we were all in, and I had 2, 3, 4, like 6 of clubs to start, and I'm like, I'm gonna win this hand, or I'm gonna split it. You know, and then I got, I didn't make my low, and I didn't make my straight, and I made like a pair of queens on the end or something, and I was out. So,
you know,
it was okay. You know, it was a $5 seat. I can afford a $5 seat to play in the event that I really want to play in. So don't forget, it's Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. If you want to learn more about apes, it's anyupmagazine.com/apes. And our next free roll is August 21st at noon, and it's No Limit Hold'em. So lots of events coming up for you guys to play and enjoy and be with the nation.
And, of course, our quickly becoming our favorite part of the show. The feedback when folks call in or email us to tell us how stupid we are.
Well, it's your favorite part of the show because you don't edit the show.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
I have to put all these clips in there and edit them. So it's slowly but surely your favorite part, but not mine. But what I do enjoy is hearing from Irwin, who we haven't heard from in years. He was like our number one fan back when we were at the Times. And now he's back and he's got something to say. I'm so excited.
Yeah, you know, we have all these listeners that are hitting the boards heavy for a while, and then they disappear. And I always wonder, you know, hey, they stepping out on us? They get bored with us? They move on? But no, some of them just taking some time off.
All right, let's
hang in the back, please.
Let's hear his clip.
Hi, this is Aaron Blonk with the Third Try. It's been a long time ago since I called you guys, but I'm still a listener. So, about the Minkus you talked about a week ago, I think only with rebuy tournaments you really have the concept of a Minkus. You know, when you buy in, do 3 or 4 rebuys, and you just get in the money, you certainly have a Minkus. So, yeah, that's my idea of what a Minkus is. And besides tournaments where they play the first spots in the money less than the buy-in, which is a bit strange, I think. And rebuys are the only situations where you can have an in-cash. And that's it for this week. Bye, guys.
But you know,
see, we should have known that there's always math involved in everything here.
But you know,
it's always an official term for stuff that we don't
know.
I'm
not even positive that Irwin advanced the subject at all there. I'm just happy he called in. And next time I hope he says schmoking a pancake. That's what I'm hoping.
Oh, yes.
If he says that for me, I will be giddy as all hell. I mean, I love hearing his voice, and I'm so glad he's back. And but yeah, no, of course Matt's involved somehow. I didn't even think about the rebuy angle, and
yeah.
He's true. It's true. Minkash.
It's because I never rebuy, and I know you never rebuy. So I mean, we would never know that.
No, I don't rebuy. I just make final tables.
Of course, you asked for it, Chris.
I know.
I know. You went off on this riff about Gundam being some kind of sci-fi kids anime. Dog or something or whatever on TV last week, and thought it matched up. Well, of course, completely wrong. And not only did Gundam call in to tell you were wrong, and of course he's the ultimate authority here, right?
Yeah.
But also our new good friend Jeff Akimoto wrote in too to tell you were wrong. So,
well, yeah, and not so much that I was wrong, but just to inform me on it, which is pretty funny. So first, let's listen to Gundam. And by the way, we said we were getting back to poker, but look how quickly we get off of poker again.
It's all related.
Here's Gundam.
Hey, this is Gundam Poker. Now you guys are, like, actually requesting me to call in. That seems pretty dangerous. Anyway, the name Gundam, where it came about was it was a random word selected on the internet. We were trying to think of a poker name, and instead of coming up with one, we just hit a random button, and Gundam was the random word that came up on Wikipedia, I think. And so that's where it came from. Completely 100% random. There's the story. It's short. Sorry. Bye.
So, you know, the funny thing here is that I looked up the Wikipedia entry that he mentions, and it is about the sci-fi series. So, essentially, he did get his name from the sci-fi series, right?
He just didn't know it.
He just didn't know he was getting it from there. So we've helped him understand himself.
See? People helping people. That's what Annie Epp's all about.
But almost immediately after we posted the show and talking about it, I got a letter from Jeff. And he says, although the most recent Gundam series are for kids, or is that is for kids? I hate the word series. I never know if it's plural or singular or what. You know, it's like I always want to say series is.
Yeah.
But the earliest Gundam series were actually quite well written and had themes and characterizations that were for more mature audiences.
So like SpongeBob.
Yeah, and then he says to me, may I suggest Netflix's Mobile Suit Gundam 0080, War in the Pocket? No, you may not, Jeff.
I have 0076 and 77, and then, you know, I ran out of money, so.
You know, my TiVo is full of other geeky shows, so I can't really get this one on there. But he says, despite the giant robot battle tag, those mid to late 80s Gundam series were amazingly anti-war in their perspective. Keep up the good work, guys.
Wow.
So, wow. You know, you open your mouth, and I should have inserted my foot because I've learned way much more than I want to about Gundam, regardless of person or show.
Yeah, just think of what you pushed out of your brain just now.
I know.
To absorb that information.
I'm going to forget to file my taxes this year or something. I'm going to get screwed for this.
I'm hoping it was like your stud 8 River Play or something. So. But yeah, hey, thanks, Gunner. Thanks, Jeff. We appreciate all the feedback that we get.
Hey, you know, every week I look forward to this now because – you know, the percentage of our cabins that are booked always goes up. So I'm wondering, how are things going with the cruise, Scott?
All right. Well, it's not a dramatic jump. I think last week we reported 55% book. We sold probably another 5 cabins, so we're about 60% booked. But that is just the hard bookings, as I like to call them. You know, I'm using this travel lingo now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm not a travel agent, but if I use this lingo enough, maybe somebody will think I am.
But you play one on TV.
Exactly, exactly. But our effective bookings... and that's because we sold a bunch of these cabins to poker rooms who have not yet given them out. We are close to 85-90% on our initial allotment of staterooms now.
Yes.
It's a lot of people.
Yes.
Now, we can get a few more cabins. We probably will. But you got until August 19th to give me a little ring-a-ding and get on the ship. After that, I can't guarantee I can help you out. You're going to have to go win a seat. And if you live in Utah with Jason from J-Design... Good luck, because there's no satellites in Utah.
Just $2.99 a person, man.
That's right. That's right. You know, somebody this week told me, wow, that's it? And I'm like, yeah, that's it. And she's like, that's one pot in a 1-2 no-limit game. And I'm like, well, you play better in 1-2 no-limit games than me. But yeah, if that was what helps to justify it, absolutely. One pot.
All right. Let's see what's going on in the Ante Up News Desk.
A game theory algorithm designed for poker is now being used to randomize security checks at Pittsburgh International Airport, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reports. How effective the algorithm developed by a Carnegie Mellon professor and a student has been at the airport is hard to quantify, but officials say at the very least it keeps security officers more engaged since they do something different every day.
Oh, my God. You know, well, actually, we're going to be flying into this airport pretty
soon,
too,
aren't we? Yes, exactly. So we're going to have our poker faces on and see whether we can break through the labyrinth.
You know, the last thing we need these security guys is trying to understand and use an algorithm. I mean, you know, these guys are already, like, confused and not the brightest people on the planet, so...
Oh, man, see? You're all upset because they finally took your toothpaste.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was going with it, man. They take my toothpaste... I don't think they can understand game theory. So, you know, you try to explain to them that there's not a half, you know, there's easily less than 3 ounces in this bottle despite the size of it. They don't care. They can't figure it out, so they're throwing it out. So how are they going to figure out game theory algorithms?
Oh, man. Oh, yes, folks. The air marshal will be sitting right next to Chris on the next play. I assume you'll probably put the link to this story in the forum post on magazine.com/forum. And I encourage people to read it. It's actually a very fascinating story. I mean, I'm not going to spend hours talking about it here. But they did talk about that whole, you know, no one there really understands this. You know, it's a couple, brainiacs from Carnegie Mellon that came up with this.
Yeah.
And they tailored it to the security. But you know, it seems to be helping a little bit there. And it all started with poker. These guys try to set out an algorithm to crack poker, and there's actually a whole little background on other folks that are doing poker algorithms in the story. So, very interesting. These guys seem to be the best at it, at least according to the story.
Is it just me, or does Carnegie Mellon lose a little of its legitimacy when you think about the back-to-school movie with Ronnie Dangerfield, his name is Mellon? I can't help but think of that and... think that that school is not as great as it could be.
maybe.
Carnegie's nice, you know, Carnegie Hall, all the family money there and everything, but Mellon just doesn't do it for me. All right.
See, I always thought it was funny. My best friend went to Carnegie Mellon, and I'm like, you had to pay to go? I mean, it was created by Carnegie and Mellon.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it should be free.
It should be free. What? All right, PokerStars has launched its Women's Poker League, offering female players a chance to earn points toward monthly and annual prizes, cash, and event packages. At least 2 tournaments a day are scheduled. What do you think, Scott?
The best part of this is Alex Callis of the Bleacher Report has a bounty on his head. Every event.
Oh, my God. It's great, though. You know, PokerStars advances poker in every way possible, and it's great that they've gotten on board with the female players as well here. I know that they've actually contacted some of our female poker friends and saw how they can get them involved as well. So it's great. Good thing doing.
Yeah, and the best thing about it is it's computerized, so no jacknut guy can enter these things. I guess if you technically lie about creating an account to be a woman.
Yeah, do you actually put in if you're male or female? I can't recall.
There's got to be some kind of qualifier, right?
I think. Wow.
I would think. So maybe I take that back. Maybe some jacknuts can get in.
Yeah, we'll see. But still, nonetheless, a nice advancement for poker.
Absolutely. And finally, if you've ever wanted to be part of the on-air talent team for the World Poker Tour, and frankly, Chris, who hasn't?
Of course.
Now's your chance. The televised tournament series is auditioning regular Joes and Janes to host its new Raw Deal segment. To apply, upload a video at facebook.com/worldpokertour before August 15th. Or attend the live casting call at the Bike in L.A. on August 19th.
This is the part of the show where I thank you for asking me to start a magazine.
Because you would have been all over this.
I would have been miserable at work at the Times and doing some stupid North Suncoast Times edition, you know, where, you know, a kitten was rescued out of a tree and we have a 5-page photo spread on it. And I'd be like, I'm going to go do this. So, you know, thank you, Scott, because otherwise I might have made a fool of myself. More than usual, and tried to join the World Poker Tour.
My favorite part of the press release, this is you get to work right alongside the Royal Flush Girls. It was something like, you know, close to Vince Van Patten and Mike Sexton and Kimberly Lansing, but real close to the Royal Flush Girls.
Yeah, I have a feeling a guy's going to be hired for this.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, you know, they say that it's open to men and women, but I don't know. All right. Our hotline is 813-448-1120. Every week someone calls, and every week we use it, and every week we give something away. So let's see who's getting something today.
Hey, guys. This is Lou Mack from Rhode Island. Just on my way back from a little poker session at Mohegan Sun. And I got to tell you, it is, while it's nicer, it's just the service and the dealers and the floor personnel just aren't as good as at Foxwoods. Several times we waited at least an hour for a waitress. Floor personnel had to break up a fight while I was there tonight. Just absolutely outrageous. I want to know if you guys have visited the Mohegan Room since it's been open for about 2.5-3 years now. Love the show. Just listening to the latest and keeping me awake on the ride home. So thanks a lot. Keep up the good work.
All right, I guess I should talk about this, right? Because
yes,
I've been
yes.
to both rooms.
I've not been to either one of them yet. So I'm just going to sit back and
well,
let you tell your story about how you stiffed a waitress on a tip.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't stiff any wedges at Mohegan Sun, but probably because I haven't seen him for over an hour like this guy. So I don't know. When I was at the Mohegan Sun when it was electronic table, so I didn't go when it was
really?
New. Yeah, so, you know, I can't speak intelligently about it. Of course, I can't speak intelligently about a lot of things. I did like the Foxwoods Poker Room better as far as the ambiance and aesthetically pleasing. But, again, it's hard to judge because it wasn't completed yet when I was there. Now they got, like, 42 tables and real dealers and everything, and they've hosted, obviously, the NAPT there. So I can't really say I like the Mohegan Sun over the Foxwoods, but I've always preferred Foxwoods the casino over Mohegan Sun the casino, so that's just my take on it.
That's something. You know, we get this WNBA theme going on here, and didn't the Mohegan Sun have like an NBA, WNBA team there?
They still do.
All right.
The Connecticut Sun.
That's what I thought, but you know what I read today was that the Foxwoods is now a sponsor of the New York Liberty WNBA team.
Wow.
And on the front of their jerseys, it says Foxwoods.
Wow.
That's awesome. It's like soccer now. You know, we need to get Andy up on the front of some WNBA team.
I want to be on the Monarchs.
Oh, the Monarchs. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Hey, that's pretty weird, too, because really, Foxwoods is nowhere near New York.
Oh, well, yeah. But, I mean, it would be awkward for them to be on the Connecticut, what are they, Suns?
Yeah. Those? No, I know. It's just weird. I mean, they're in the proximity of New York. They're in the tri-state area, but it's like eastern Connecticut, you know, versus...
Yeah, but
you know,
I mean,
it's just weird.
It's massive marketing for them in Manhattan, so...
Yeah, it's true. You know, that is true.
It's probably worth it.
Well, what's he win?
Well, he's got a brand new item on our swag shelf this week, Chris. It is a t-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, and if you've not checked them out, they have hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerwear.com. A great company created down here in Florida. You know, they really have some funny stuff on there.
Yes, I've seen them. I've actually seen some of the women wearing them, too, because I've attended a few of these events for the magazine. And, yeah, they are pretty funny.
But definitely some stuff there for the guys there, too. They had like a Poker Wars one. And I forget the other one that I thought was funny that I thought about ordering. But I'm going to wait till I win one.
I think they actually sponsor the wardrobe of that Callus guy, too.
Yes. All right, well, if you want to win a piece of swag, remember our hotline is 813-448-1120. And you can also win swag by sending us a mailbag question to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Yeah, you know, this next one, I'm hoping you respond to this guy. I figured you would because he kind of emailed you.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so I'll read it real quick. I enjoyed your road trip feature in the current electronic version of Ante Up regarding poker in the South. You know, and I always want to know how many people are actually reading it online, so that would be great, because now that's right there. There's another reader right there. So
we're up to three now.
We're up to three.
Jeff, your mom and my mom.
I was puzzled about something I read in the article that perhaps you could explain. The feature implies the only poker in Georgia is on the two cruise ships. On page 22, however, there's an article about Ken Murphy, guest starring on our show today, winning the $500 Atlanta Poker Club's monthly tournament hosted at the Tilted Kilt in Johns Creek, Georgia. Can anybody play at the Tilted Kilt?
I love the kilt. And you know who loves the kilt more than me?
Your wife?
Well, no, she enjoys it too. Because they have those big 110-ounce lube tube things.
Yeah.
But no, Gambit
is
obsessed with the Tilted Kilt. And I've shamed him into not inviting me whenever he goes, because it's close to my house. I'll get him the Tilted Kilt, you know?
Yeah, it's right there by the field.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and it's a chain, apparently, because they have them up in Georgia here. But no, Jeff, here's the answer to your question. Our road trip is geared towards poker rooms where you can play for real money, where you buy in and win real money.
Right, it's legal. Right? Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, casinos, paramutual tracks, these day cruises, as you mentioned, that go out of Brunswick and Savannah, Georgia. However, there's this whole cottage industry of poker leagues, and that is what the Atlanta Poker Club is. A lot of them here in Florida, they're spanning out. Some other states have a lot of them too, right?
Yes.
The deal is you can't play for money. You can't go in there and buy into a 3-6 game or something. But you go and you play tournaments, and you win points, and the people who get the most points get to trade them in for real prizes, like Ken Murphy's $500.
Well, yeah, because you qualify for like a monthly tournament.
Exactly.
And then you'll play in the monthly tournament, and then they can give away a large prize at the end, like a $500 gift card or something, which is what he probably won,
right.
And or trophies, things like that, too. So it's not the same thing. When we're writing about it, we're writing about actual poker where you can sit down and play for cash. So
exactly.
But you know, he should have said that it
still
was
stuff.
He should have said it was a well-written piece, though. I mean, you did a good job with it, buddy.
I cut that part off, actually. He went on. It was actually about 7 pages longer about you know, how great this Ms. Rocky story was. And like, you know, we got to keep the show light and bright today because Chris is going to get edited and stuff. There's all these clips and stuff. So just didn't want to go on and on, you know?
Like you're doing right now.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, so now what'd he win?
All right, Jeff, we appreciate you sending something in. We're going to send you a deck of those beautiful J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Ante Up. And hopefully some of our winners won Jason's great contest over at ClassicPlayingCards.com. In fact, actually one I know did. Remember Chris from the British Columbia that called in last week?
Yeah.
You know, he wanted me to send a sheet of the uncut cards, and I'm like, hey, sorry, fresh out. They wrote me today, hey, guess what? I just won the contest over there.
Oh, man, that's so cool.
And I
cool.
got my own uncut sheet of cards.
That is so cool.
So see, real people do win stuff somewhere other than Ante Up.
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that PokerStars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our PokerStars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, Chris, I just got back from a beautiful vacation with my wife celebrating our 10th anniversary, and immediately I had to get in the car and drive to Orlando for the State of Florida Division of Paramutual Wagering Card Room Rulemaking Session. And I was pleased as punch to do this because you love to do this stuff. And I arm wrestled you and won and got to take it from you this time.
Well, actually, if everyone knows that it's actually in our contract agreement when we started the company that I would never have to go to any one of these things and you would have to go to all of them. Thank God.
And see, it works out because I look forward to going to this stuff. And you would rather have a root canal while hungover.
That's right. While chewing on tinfoil.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, before we lose any of our other listeners here, I want to assure you that we're not going to be yapping a bunch of arcane rules about Florida here. But I found it interesting because there's some discussions there that apply to poker everywhere. And I thought maybe our listeners who don't necessarily know the behind-the-scenes kind of stuff that goes on to provide them this great game that they like would be interested in hearing in some of these discussions, because I think they'll be able to discuss it in their home games and with their friends and figure out their own views on some of the stuff that came out of this.
Very cool.
So that's how I sold you on this main topic today. And for the 4 people still listening, I think you're going to find it somewhat interesting. If not, the hand of the week is phenomenal.
Yeah, the funny thing is, too, is they can't see our notes, but the first note says, mundane stuff. So, yeah, that's going to really sell the audience on the show.
Well, you know, I had to lay down a base here, right? You know, you got to work your way up to the good stuff. So, but real quickly, just so people know what's going on here, you know, the legislature in Florida passes laws, right?
Yeah.
And then, but and just like any state, the lawmakers can't spell out everything in the law, right?
Right.
You know, they say, oh, hey, no limits on poker. All right, that's great. But then it takes the regulatory board, which here in Florida is the Division of Parimutuel Wagering. Other places it's an actual gaming board, which is much better, yeah, I think.
Absolutely.
To actually figure out what that means. You know, what are these lawmakers talking about when they pass this law? And so some of the things you don't think about, Chris, are definitions.
Yeah.
All right, so when someone says no limit poker, what do we mean by poker? I mean, really, I mean, how many people think that this crap goes on?
What do they mean
by
poker?
A bunch of people get together in a room and debate what poker is so everybody can agree on it. It's hilarious if you're not actually there.
Yeah, but it has to be done, really.
And other stuff, too, like, you know, what constitutes a table? And it's funny because, you know, this is the first time I've been in the rulemaking session, but I've talked to lobbyists before, and some of them get excited about this stuff. You know, hey, the rules don't say anything about what a table is. So it could be a virtual table, Scott. I'm like, wow, you guys, you're making your $400 an hour, I could tell. But they have an entire sheet. It was like 40 definitions, and then they had to add more during this thing because you had to spell it out. So kind of crazy. And then part of that, too, is wording. It's really – and folks that are listeners that probably deal with lawyers or have had dealt with lawyers probably know this all too well. It's amazing how one little tiny word or the absence of one little tiny word can completely change what people can do.
You got to be careful when you're editing these things.
Exactly. I mean, let's think back to our famous Florida example, the law that passed a couple years ago. Games of No Limit Texas Hold'em will be allowed. Thank you, Mr. Lawmaker. By putting Texas Hold'em in there, you made for 3 years it impossible for us to play No Limit Omaha or No Limit Stud or No Limit Ocean.
Ocean.
There's no reason you had to put the Texas Hold'em in there, but it defined everything. But there's a lot of debate going back and forth of, you know, what do you mean by this word? And people scratch their heads and blah, blah, blah. Because if that's what you mean, then I can do this, right? So it's kind of, again, it's mundane stuff, but, you know, those one words can affect how when you walk into a poker room, what kind of game you can play.
And now it's crystal clear why you enjoy these. I mean, really, this is hilarious. How could someone actually look forward to this stuff? I don't know.
All right, let's move on to stuff that might get you a little more excited.
Okay.
Get one eyebrow raised.
Okay.
And then I promise we're going to finish with a bang.
All right, cool.
It might be a whimperish bang, but it'll finish with a bang. all right, so one of the debates that went on is the great thing about this that I thought was interesting is you've got regulators and you've got poker room managers. And essentially, at the root, they're fighting, right?
Yeah.
You know, the poker room managers want more freedom. The regulators want to rein them in a little bit. But at the end of the day, everybody in that room just wants to be sure that players have a good, fair, regulated game.
Right.
And I think most players, except for the cheats, would agree that that's a good thing to have, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to go into a poker room with $500,000 and plunk it down and find out you're being cheated, right?
Right.
So these people are working towards a similar goal, but they're doing it in different ways and sometimes betting heads. So one of these examples is damaged cards. All right, so Chris, you're in a game, and you see a nick in the back of a card. What do you do?
I tell the dealer.
What do you tell the dealer?
I say, hey, there's a damaged card there. Take it out and get us a new setup or a new deck or whatever.
All right, now, if you have a good dealer, he's going to look at the car, look at it, and call the floor up, right?
Yeah.
Of course, occasionally I have a couple of dealers. I go, I can't really tell. Reshuffles it and deals out. I'm like, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Rack it up, player out. So here in Florida, the practice has been when one card is damaged in a deck, the room has to take the entire deck out of circulation.
That's crazy.
They got to take the damage card. They got to seal it in an envelope, keep it there for 2 weeks in case there's an investigation or anything like that. But the other 51 cards, which are perfectly fine, have to be destroyed.
It's crazy.
Well, it could be crazy, right?
Yeah.
But so what poker rooms were saying, you know, wait a minute, come on. We got to throw the baby out with the bathwater. 51 good cards. Let us, you know, replace the damage card with a good card in that deck and not make us go out and call the Annie hotline to win another deck of cards to replace the one.
It makes sense.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, it could be a little debate. I mean, I wonder what some of our listeners say. You know, if a deck is fouled, maybe some people want the whole deck gone. Because there are some things, it has to come, you know, obviously if you don't choose it from the same lot of cards that you bought, the colors might be a little bit off, so you're not really solving the problem, you're creating a new problem, and things like that. So I can see the reasoning for destroying an entire deck, but still, it's very costly.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is the argument. I think you remember a while ago when I was trying to fill the magazine with content because we didn't have any. I wrote a bunch of book reviews, and one of the reviews I wrote was that 52 Ways to Cheat at Poker.
Ah, yes, yes.
And that's what they do is they buy a box, and then like a week later they'll buy another box of cards, not you know like a whole gross or whatever, and then one blue die lot will be different than another blue, but it'll be so slight that they'll put the aces in and mix them up, and no one else will really know, but that person will know. Same thing here. I mean, if you mark the deck, of course it's going to take, you know, I mean, how you know, somebody marks a deck in a poker room, they're not going to know where that card arrives and what deck at what table. So it's pretty far-fetched, but I can see, you know, somebody taking it to its fullest extreme and saying that's the reason, but really is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, well, you know, save that thought because that's number three on my list here. We'll get into the whole how easy it is really to cheat in a poker room now. But the most contentious thing at all these sessions from what I heard, and certainly at this one, was surveillance. Right,
oh, yeah.
And I know how much you appreciate surveillance, right?
Because yeah, especially me.
You were SOL at the World Series a couple years back, according to your dealer.
Yep.
But the eye in the sky made it all right.
Yeah, it let me play one more hand. It let me go out with King 3.
But, you know, we walk in these poker rooms and we see the little bubbles in the sky. You know, we know there's cameras up there. They know they're watching. But to be honest, I haven't really thought about what they're watching very much. Have you?
No, I mean, one time we got that tour of the security facility at Daytona and got to see what those cameras were watching, but I've never really thought about it. I always thought it just got everything, you know. I never really thought about specifically where it was located or feature, you know, focused on.
Yeah, and, you know, part of the discussion here is the division wants to be sure that everything is being watched, right?
Yeah.
And obviously there is a tremendous cost involved in watching everything. And not just watching everything, but watching it at a predetermined detail that is very detailed. For the lack of a better term. And, I mean, these surveillance systems can cost in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah. Easy.
So, I mean, the balance here is how much surveillance do you need, whereas if you don't do more than that, the game might be compromised, versus... if you require too much, do you just put the poker rooms out of business? Because it's just ridiculous. All the money going into these very sophisticated cameras that may or may not be needed, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that was interesting was they're talking about the range of the table. And the division here wanted the cameras to be able to see the denominations on the chips, that kind of detail, the numbers on the bills being spread out. But at the same time, see everything else that's going on. And turns out that some of the surveillance experts that were there say, hey, that camera doesn't exist. NASA may have it, but they're not lending it to us. So that was kind of a wake-up call to me that, you know, I just always assumed that when I was in a room that they can see everything about me and everything was going on and something happened. Hey, call the eye in the sky like you did for Cassandra. Fix this problem. And that may or may not be true, depending on what room you're in.
Let there be ice cream for all of my patrons.
But the biggest thing, though, is, you know, hey, they want to be able to see, you know, people that they want to kick out and stuff. There was a very interesting discussion going on or one of the requirements was the cameras had to be able to see the face of everyone at all times.
Oh, my God.
And rooms were like, wait a minute, this is poker. We got people wearing sunglasses, we got people wearing hoods, we got people that part of their game is to conceal themselves from the fellow players. So, I mean, unless we're going to get Superman X-ray cameras, you're not going to be able to see the face at all times.
No, I mean, you got these Joe Pesci wannabes with their hat screwed on sideways.
Yeah.
There's just no way you're going to see their face and the card. I mean, unless they had cameras, you know, like those ugly World Poker Tour bulbous regions that are in
the middle of the table,
you know, looking back at everybody and making things just absolutely miserable. It's just not going to happen.
So this began a discussion where the division's like, no, wait a minute. Aren't you guys concerned that you can't see bad people in your room and be able to identify them? Interesting point. But then it started a more interesting discussion about how poker is, by and large, a self-policing game.
Yeah.
All right, the point is that you got 10 people at the table plus the dealer. If something cricket's going on, Chris, you've got 10 people there, or 11 actually, counting the dealer. Well, 10, because there's somebody cheating. that are watching everything, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where most of the cheating is caught. It's not by cameras in the sky or floor people walking by watching. It's by the players themselves.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, that's how they caught them online. The players themselves caught them.
But, you know, I haven't really thought about that until this came up that, you know, hey, well, let's not over-regulate ourselves. Our players are capable of helping us maintain a fair game for everyone.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not that the house gets an edge with this. It's the players' game, and they're policing their own players. So, I mean, it's not like if they don't have this, you know, retina eye recognition surveillance stuff.
Awesome, Terminator.
Installed. You know, that they're going to lose out. I mean, they're doing everything they're supposed to do and what they're capable of doing to secure our game for us. It's up to us to watch everybody, you know, too. I mean, obviously, you know, again, I go back to that book I read and wrote a review on. You know, you've got to know some of the ways that people can cheat, too, to recognize them. But, you know, something smells fishy. It's probably a fish.
Tilapia, maybe. All right, now let's get to the stuff that for the one person that's left that I think is really interesting for all rooms. One, a huge discussion here about whether prop players and shills should be allowed in Florida poker rooms.
Well, you know, the sad thing is I think I'm the one person still listening.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you're still there because sometimes you do doze off.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, a lot of times we have people who listen to the show and they want to know what the hell it is we're talking about. Why don't you explain what a prop player and a shill is?
All right, yeah, it's a good difference. A prop player is a player that earns a wage from the poker room, paid an hourly wage, and their job is the poker room manager will put them in shorthanded games to get games going and then pull them out when the game gets going and move them into another small game and get that game going. Or pop them in the games that are getting ready to break to keep the game going.
Basically, they're going a lot.
Yes.
And they actually, most of the time, if not all the time, play with their own money, too.
Yes, that is the difference. They are playing with their own money. A shill is the exact same thing, except the casino is staking them.
Yes.
And by and large, everybody seems to be anti-shill. So let's just scratch that off. But a lot of rooms around the country still use prop players. And I remember our good friend Kenneth James, he cut his teeth being a prop player.
That's correct.
And, you know, it's a good way of learning shorthanded games. And when you're a prop player and you're working for the casino, you're not in there trying to get on the World Poker Tour.
No.
You know, you're not making moves. You're just playing good, solid ABC poker. You're kind of like the Switzerland of the poker table.
Yeah.
Not trying to offend anyone, not trying to take anybody down.
You're there to help the house keep your money without losing it, and you know, and probably study the players a little bit. So when you do play them elsewhere, you got a little background. So it's a good process for a prop player. I mean, they get educated, they get paid, and they learn how to manage their bankroll.
And more importantly, for folks like us, it keeps games going.
Exactly.
That's the biggest thing about poker. If you go to a poker room and there are two people in the poker room, there's not a poker room.
Nope.
So you need it's not like blackjack. So you need to have games going, and particularly for players like me who like to play these oddball games like Omaha that are hard to get going, if there you got four people sitting around wanting to play, a prop player can make the difference between getting that game going or not.
Yep, absolutely.
So I have a hard time understanding why anybody's against prop players.
So were there people there saying that we shouldn't have them at this
meeting?
Well,
yes. The state was suggesting that they be banned.
Oh, that's crazy.
And part of the discussion was part private. I don't think it really came out during the meeting. Was they were worried about collusion. Yeah. You've got players that are being paid by the casino to sit in the game. Are they more or less likely to be involved in collusion?
I don't even see that being a problem. I don't know. Maybe I'm just narrow-minded with it, but that's kind of crazy. Why would they jeopardize their, you know, the whole reason you got the job is because you're getting paid to play poker, which is a lot of people's dreams.
Exactly.
You know? Well, it doesn't make any sense that you'd want to collude with a player at the table that you're sitting at to make more money. You know, you're going to know players at the table whether you're a prop player or not. It doesn't mean you're colluding with them. It's just crazy.
Well, yeah, and it gets back to the whole self-policing thing, and that's what one of the poker managers said is, hey, you know, I it's better for the game and better protection for our players to have one of our employees, two of our employees, actually, because the dealer's there too, sitting in a game watching everything.
Right.
It's going to be less, it's going to be more likely that we're going to catch something weird going on, not more likely that more weirder stuff's going to be going on.
And also, these rooms are... Aren't they obligated to point out who their prop players are?
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
so
you'll see that
board.
A lot of places. You know, they have to be identified if requested. And all the poker managers say, hey, we're not going to wait for people to request. We'll tell people, hey,
yeah,
Chris Cosenza here, he's a prop player.
Yeah, he's a bad
one. He's here
one.
To help to get the game going, man. We congratulate. Thanks for coming out. We're happy to be able to get this game going for you.
Trust me, you want Chris Cosenza, the prop player, in your game.
Well, related to this, another prohibition that was debated was dealers being allowed to play in their own room.
Yeah, this one kind of freaked me out when I was in Vegas at the Mirage, and I'm playing with the guy who was dealing with me last night. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I mean, the first time it happened to me at the Plaza in downtown Vegas, you know, after the Binion's closed down for a little bit, Plaza became the place to play downtown.
Yeah.
I was a woman who was dealing to me. And then next time I look up, another dealer's pushing her a pot because she sucked out on me. Wait a minute, she's in my game now playing? That's so weird.
It is weird. I don't know if I have a problem with it. It just was weird.
Yeah, and I guess that's a discussion going on is for a lot of the poker rooms, they're talking, hey, you know, our dealers could be our prop players. You know, we're paying them one way or the other.
Yeah.
So if there's not games to be dealing, we can put them in games to keep them going. The other argument is that, you know, some of these rooms here in Florida are out in the sticks.
Yeah.
You know, so when dealers get off work, if they got to drive 2 hours to play in a real poker room, are they going to do that? Or are they going to get a home game going that's illegal?
Right.
Because, you know, your dealers, they like to play for the most part, right?
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why they get into dealing, so they can study players and learn the game and get better at it.
So it was almost an argument that you're creating more problems by not letting dealers play in the room. Now, it's a different argument, I think, than the prop players. And I can see why people would be a little uncomfortable having dealers play in their room.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an overall weird thing. I mean, it's not on the level of, hey, an employee of McDonald's can't enter the Monopoly game, you know,
yeah, right.
You know, rules dictate, because it looks like it could be some sort of slanted or fixed. But in poker... You know, the dealer dealing to a dealer friend isn't going to, like, all of a sudden be a mechanic and pull the ace of spades off the bottom of the deck. I mean, it's just another person playing poker, and if these guys can't get to another poker room, why should they be punished for that? You know, it's. I mean, I guess it's something that you have to live with. And a lot of other businesses is like that, you know, or other careers, where if you choose that career, then you're choosing to give up enjoying what it is that you're careering or whatever. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's true.
But I don't know. I don't think I have a problem with. You know, obviously we do it on our ship, you know.
Yeah. You know, I guess really the only thing I can think of that's a problem, other than just making your players potentially uncomfortable, whether they should be or not, is, you know, if you get into a hand with a dealer and there's a floor ruling,
yeah.
I mean, you got some of that favoritism in there, right?
Yeah.
Right or wrong, I mean, so does that mean the dealer is going to have to suck it up and, you know, take a decision against them because they want to keep the players happy? Or if you decide rightfully in the dealer's favor, now does the player get ticked off and storm out because, you know, it's...
Yeah, slanted.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
You and I are kind of in that boat, too, you know, where you know, a lot of these rooms that we're playing poker in are our advertisers and essentially our bosses.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
We're working there, and then if something happens where we're not happy with a decision, we can't make a big fuss over it because, you know, then they might get mad at us and it might cause our business to, you know, to be suffer. So I understand the problem. And then you're right. That is probably the biggest problem is just not, you know, having the people be upset that you didn't rule in their favor and you ruled in the dealer's favor or whatever. So that's a good point. But even that, it's such a rare thing. And you know what? If you trust your floor people and they're being truly, you know, unbiased, then I have no problem with it.
Yeah. All right. And then finally, this one got a lot of pub there. The state wanted a consistent color scheme for all chips throughout the state.
See, now this is
You're chuckling already.
It's funny because it makes perfect sense that you'd want this.
Yes.
But
yes.
You want it when you're starting poker rooms for the first time throughout the entire state, not after you've let them buy chips, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of chips, without telling them you wanted consistent colors. And
right.
Now, you know, it's almost impossible to do, but it's a great idea. It's just stupid.
And that was the argument made, is like, you know, hey, Mr. Division Director, I just spent, you know, $4,000 on new chips. Now you're telling me I have to throw them away and buy new chips so they're all matching. Not to mention all your chips, because, you know, if your color scheme is way off, you got to replace everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point I guess the state was making is this confusing for players to walk into room A and the $5 chip be pink, and go across the street to room B and the $5 chip be green, and go up the street and the $5 chip be red?
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. You know,
is it?
To me,
you know,
it is.
It's a discussion, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's silly. I mean, first of all, you're changing locales, so you need to look down at the chips, and you know, and there's a big denomination written on them too. And as soon as you get, you know, when you go to somebody's home game, you know, you say, "What are these chips?" You know what I mean? And when you're at the casino, you know what the chips are. They're gonna have different patterns on them and designs for their logos and everything. So even if they are essentially all the same color, they're still gonna look different and be different anyway. So if they're gonna look different and be different, why do they have to be the same color? It's just I don't buy that argument. I do buy the consistent argument, because you know everybody knows that a black chip should be 100 and a green chip should be 25 and
right.
Whatever. But really, to make that argument that people are going to get confused, that's kind of silly.
And that's kind of the funny thing in this, too, is by and large, I think most poker rooms in this state, and I think anywhere else we've gone, have that consistent color scheme for the consistent denominations.
Pretty much,
you know,
yeah.
Like a red is almost always five, like you said, and 25 a green. It's the other ones. It's the dollar chips. You know, some rooms, hey, I don't want to make them white because white gets dirty. Let's make them blue.
Blue, yeah.
Or, hey, we've got $2 chips for, you know, some of those even money games or for the rake. And there's no standard for that. So, hey, I feel like making them purple. Let's make them purple.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other interesting thing about it, too, is talking about surveillance. And they're like, you know, hey, if we do an investigation, or we got people that are charged throughout the state for doing surveillance, and if they got to go and inspect things, you know, it's an extra step for them to have to learn the colors there.
That's crazy.
Interestingly enough, they also had a rule in there that chips could play in different casinos.
Yeah, that...
Which seems like something that would be banned, considering everything else they're banning. So part of this was, you know, hey, if you're we're gonna allow chips to be played at Casino A that are from Casino B, they should be the same color.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't think they should have chips that can play in one casino and play in the other, unless it's the same casino. Like here in Florida, we're hearing that they're going to open up probably another Palm Beach Kennel Club poker room. So if they're the same club and the same chips, same denomination, that's one thing. But, you know, you don't want chips from Harrah's being put at chips at, you know, MGM. That just is weird to me. So,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I don't see how that could pop. Anybody can make any chip they want then. And, you know, who's going to inspect them and know if that's a legitimate chip in the poker room? You show up with a $5 chip and, you know, they're going to stop the floor and get the floor to come over and say, yeah, it is a Caesar's chip or not. I mean, that's ridiculously stupid.
Yeah, it was one of the discussions, actually. A poker room manager even suggested that they have a big book with everybody's chips in them so they can check. So, I mean, that's kind of the length you go to prevent the state from telling you to spend $5,000 on brand new chips.
Oh my god.
Hey, let's just get a book. That'll be cool, right? How about that?
Yeah, and then we'll update the book every 6 months because every poker room changes their chips, and you know, that's just crazy. So, oh my God, I don't know how you even stayed awake or didn't open a vein and just bleed there on the floor in front of everybody.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
All right, well, it's time to wake everybody else up. We'll move on to Hand of the Week, which probably came from a cricket, because that's all we have left here. But the cricket this week is Glance 302, Chris.
Glance 302.
Yes, he is a previous swag winner, so he is thus ineligible for today's swag.
No swag for you.
Which is a shame, because he would have won a free download of the Poker Ham Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. But he already has swag, so sorry.
Sorry, bud.
But hey, that doesn't mean we can't pick apart his hand, right?
That's right. He sent it in.
All right, so this is a live game, Chris.
Okay.
Five-player cash game, 25 cent, 50 cent.
Man, I love this game already.
Definitely on a kitchen table, I'm guessing, right?
Love this game already.
Surprisingly, for stakes this high, the game is played loose. Players limping and calling single raises with a very wide range of hands.
Did you like that? I actually laughed at your subtle sarcasm.
Well, I appreciate that.
I usually miss it, so I got that one.
And I'm not mocking our poor friend Glance here. I'm just saying. I mean, generally, when you get stakes down that low, the game is always loose, right?
Yeah, right.
Because unless you're playing with, like, you know, little Inspector 13 and the Bangladesh kid that makes our underwear, you know, 25 cent, 50 cent is nothing for anyone.
Yeah.
Right?
And we're sorry you offended our Bangladesh listeners there, but go ahead.
Hey, they got jobs. They're working well. They just happened to be making the underwear.
They're listening to their iPod while they're doing it. They're listening to us on their iPod. All right, so let's go to the hand here. What's going on?
All right, our hero is on the button with $105.
Wow. It's a double stack.
Wow, so that is like what? That's a lot of big blinds.
That's a double stack. That's like 22 big blinds.
That's big. All right, so the first player folds. Villain, a mathematical player who started the hand with Squiggly $60.
Uh-huh.
And has been drinking heavily.
Always good to know.
So I wonder if he's did the calculations on what his BAC was at this point. All right, so the mathematical player who's been drinking heavily raises to $4.
Man, it's a nice raise.
Yep. And we look down at Ace of Clubs, Nine of Diamonds.
Well, around the button, this guy's drinking heavily. He's a math player. I don't know if that really matters to me, but the drinking heavily... The guy made it almost 10x. I mean, that's just... It's crazy. 8x. You know, I'm not going to re-raise here, so... I guess I'll play. I'll probably just call and see what happens. I got 105 in front of me.
You'll peel three off, see how it goes?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. All right, well, that's what our hero decides to do. He decides to call... you know, probably getting the whiff of the Miller High Life there, and thinks he can stack this guy, right?
Yeah.
Actually, he says he thinks he has he may have the best hand, but he wants to keep the pot small to see what flops.
Well, it's too late already because he raised it $4.
It's $8 now.
I mean, that's 8x right there. Almost a $9 pot for 50 cents. That's a big pot already.
All right. Figures the villain has either nothing, like a small suited connector that missed. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm skipping ahead.
Oh, wow.
That'd be great if your hand missed already pre-flop. All right. Both blinds fold. Pot is 875.
Okay.
All right. So we're heads up against the drunk math guy.
And this is the portion of the show where you tell us about the flop.
Yes. Yes.
Don't forget that.
Excellent suggestion. Very important information for the hand of the week. All right. The flop is 9-4 deuce rainbow. That helps the discussion.
You ever notice it's always rainbow?
Yeah, well, you know, hey, we...
I never see rainbow flops in my life. But every hand of the week is rainbow because they don't want to have the flush draw possibility out there when they're recalling the hand.
See, I think it's exactly. It's so these live hands, and they're not writing everything down, so it's just easier. Oh, it doesn't matter.
It's just rainbow. It didn't matter because no flush is going to get there. When they tell you rainbow, no flush is getting there in this hand. I don't even know what's going on, but I know it's not going to be a rain a flush. So I can rule that one out. Well, we hit top pair, top kicker. I like that. What's the villain going to do?
All right, the villain throws out a quick $4 bet.
Yeah.
It probably went high velocity. I mean, he didn't slowly throw it into the pot.
Well, if it's truly rainbow, there's no draw here. I don't mind just calling here, but I think I probably would raise to see if this guy really has a hand or if that's just a continuation bet, especially when they bet so quick. When they bet so quick, usually it means that they're just running through the motions, didn't have to think about it. So if they had to think about it, I don't think they have aces or something like that. So I'm gonna raise here. I'm gonna make it 12, even though this guy wants to keep it small, so he'll probably just call.
But he wanted to keep it small to see what the flop comes. Now I would stop short of calling it a dream flop, but you know, a pretty good flop for ace nine.
It's great. It is. But you know, a guy, and sometimes when somebody makes it so big like that pre-flop, they have a small pair. You know, and they don't want to see a flop. But you know, this guy's drinking heavily, so he could have pretty much any two. So I'm gonna raise though. I'm not gonna just call. Since you gave the green light there for me, I'm gonna make it like $12.
All right, you're gonna make it $12. Well, of course you didn't listen to me when I got the hand out of order because our hero figures he has nothing like a small suited connector that missed or a pocket pair under or over. The pot is $16.75 because our hero decides to call instead of raise.
Yeah. Well, I don't like the call just because so many cards are over a nine that on the turn you could now be totally like guessing as to what he has. So if you raise, I think you get your information right there. Now the turn comes like a king or something, you know, then what do you do? So I don't like the call there, but you know, maybe you're letting this guy hang himself because you know how he plays and he's drunk. So I'm not going to fault him for calling. I just would probably raise there.
Yeah, I imagine if you took a poll, it would probably be 50-50 on this.
Yeah.
Would you think?
Right. Yeah, you're probably right.
Because here's the thing. The ABC way is to raise here because the pot is already small now. Let's get our information early.
Yeah.
So we know what we're up against. And if we get re-raised, then we know we've probably got the catch. Probably has an overpair, right?
Right.
But just calling makes sense because, you know, now we can spring into action on the turn, but you allow a danger card to hit. Or the pot is also big at that point, so if you're going to raise on the turn, now it's costing you more money.
Yeah, well, the other thing too now is you just told thousands of people I was an ABC player, so we're going to have to... we're going to have to end the show early here.
There's nothing with ABC. It's better than BCD.
Well, the problem is that I'm not sitting with this guy, and I don't really know how he plays. Like, if we could substitute our home game players into the villain, and I would tell you how I would act, but since we're not doing that, I still would raise this guy, just because he could be drunk and could spew away his squiggly $60 to me, you know, because he's drunk. But again, I'm afraid of nines are always a scary hand. If you get pocket nines, I never know what to do with them, so... Same thing here. I'm happy that I got top pair, top kicker, but really I want to know what this guy has, especially since he made it four to go pre-flop. So I'm not trying to be ABC by raising. I just want to win this pot now or find out what the hell's going on.
All right. Well, we call, remember, so the pot is $16.75. The turn is a jack.
There you go.
It is 9-4 deuce jack. Still rainbow.
Still rainbow. All right, so there's never going to be a flush now because that means four different suits.
That's right. So it'll be rainbow in the river too. We won't admit for anyone, but
again, there's the overcard. You know, this guy could have raised with Jack 10, could have made a continuation bet. We just call. Now he gets to hit the Jack for free, and we're way behind.
All kinds of hands could be.
Yeah, awesome. So I'm not happy. This is why I would have raised, but you know, what's a guy do?
Villain quickly fires out another $4 bet. So apparently, he's got a bunch of $4 bullets lined up on the table.
Apparently, we're playing limit with Scott Long. No, I think that that $4 is really weak now.
Yes.
Really weak, and I have to raise now.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing, though. If you decided just to call on the flop, I think your plan at that point would have had to been to raise on the river.
Yeah.
On
the turn, or you know, he checks in.
Because you got to get information at some point, right?
Yeah. And what the hell are you hoping to do? You know,
if you're just calling on the flop, you can't let a jack scare you on the turn.
Yeah.
If you're going to be scared of the jack on the turn, then you need to raise in the flop, right? That's what I'm saying.
Right. Plus, if he hit the jack, he would have bet more than $4. Right?
The villain hits his jack.
He's not betting four. Yeah.
Yeah. His hand just got what he wanted out of it.
Yeah. He's not betting 25% of the flop when he
hits
the card.
You're trying to feel him in here, you know?
Yeah. So I'm believing that the $4 bet is a joke, and we are way ahead, and we should raise and take it down before he actually hits one of the crappy cards in his hand.
All right. Well, Glantz says that he doesn't think the jack helped our villain here. His quick fire. Now I feel like I'm watching Top Chef. His quick fire at the pot still seems more instinctive than thought out. And that's what you said. Generally, you know, when you bet quickly, it's you're not thinking. You're just, hey,
yeah.
I took the lead in this hand. I'm going to keep firing at you.
Yep.
So he says his basis for that thought is the fact that he is drunk. So he is actually certifiably drunk now, Chris. And typically more calculated in his actions.
Okay.
All right, well.
So we... Did he call?
So, yes, we decided to call again.
Oh, man. All right. All right. Well, we call. I'm not happy with it, but we call.
Yeah, okay. So I guess here's the thing. If I'm going to call the turn here, I'm just going to call the river, right? I'm not. It doesn't make any sense to raise on the river now.
Yeah, no.
Unless I hit maybe like, I don't know where I'm hit.
Another nine.
Yeah, not an ace.
Maybe an ace, but yeah, but definitely a nine.
So, I mean, you're just kind of playing,
you're basically becoming a calling station here.
A prevent defense here,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Keeping the pot smaller.
And now there's anything wrong with that. I'm just spelling it out here, right?
Yeah.
All right. So the call makes the pot 24.75. As the river is being dealt, the villain bets all in for his remaining $48.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God.
Pot's now squiggly 73 before the river hits, which is a deuce. Final board 9-4 deuce jack deuce, still rainbow.
Oh my God! All right, well, I'm gonna put this guy on two rags or pocket eights, and I'm gonna call.
All right,
because if he had a hand that was that powerful. To do that with knowing he was, you know, because he obviously, what did you say the river was? Did you say the river yet?
Deuce.
It was a deuce. All right, so there's two deuces on the board.
Right.
Obviously,
but
he's
didn't
betting.
See the, didn't
right,
see
so I'm saying, obviously, he's betting before the deuce, so obviously, he's not saying I have a hugely strong hand here. And if he wanted to win the pot and he had a massive hand, why would he do that? Why would he bet dark $48 when he could try to get more money out of us? He bets 4-4, then 48, and does it all instantly, and he's drunk. We're ahead, and now that I'm saying all this too, I don't even put him on as good a hand as eights.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking this guy's just got, he could have just two rags, he could have anything.
It could be ace king or something.
Yeah, or something like that, but something
like shoving,
that didn't
hit. He's trying to push you off the hand, and if he gets lucky and hits the ace king, then all the better.
I mean, that's just so, the whole way he played the hand was just so.
Well, and I think
fishy.
I mean, not that I obviously I didn't really support the two calls from us already.
Right.
But the way we played it now made us look weak.
Yeah, it makes us look like we're drawing
so
to something.
Almost bets, almost baits him into making this move because, I mean, what possibly could come that we're going to call $48 here?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a calculated risk, calculated drunk risk, too. unless you have smart people like you and hopefully a glance here that says, wait a minute, I smell a fish.
Yeah, that's pretty odd. This guy, I just can't imagine this guy having a big hand here. And even if we're wrong, which I'm not saying we are, because I think this guy's got air. But if we're wrong, we still have like, you know, 100 big blinds. You know, this, you know, it's what, 50, 60 bucks. So we're still gonna have like $45 left when this is over anyway. If we lose, and if we win, we got a huge stack and we're gonna control this game. So I really can't put this guy on like a set of fours for a full house or, you know, ace jack now. I just can't do it, especially the way he bet and the information that he gave us. You know, maybe he's got pocket fives, but it just seems like it's a small, small pair that didn't – I don't think he set it because if he made a full house, why would he go all in? So I'm thinking he's got rags. I don't know what the rags could possibly be, but I think they're rags.
All right. Well, our hero is very suspect with the show. He's putting them on a small pair, weak ace, or two undersuited cards. undersuited connectors. Two undersuited connectors. That's a new term. he says, seeing that I was willing to call after the flop, I figure he would have bet more on the turn to get more value if he had a bigger hand. A set or quads is possible, but I don't think he'd be risk losing a value bet on the river.
Right.
So our hero calls.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to be ahead here. Everything he just said makes sense. You know, the set or quads thing, that's not possible. So that's the only thing I disagree with. But everything else, absolutely. He would have bet more on the turn because we called and came along. So he would have wanted to make more than $4 on the turn. That's the key right there. And then going in before the deuce comes out on the river, you know that he didn't have a set going in. So he's got to be beat here. We have to be ahead here. We're taking this down, baby.
We're taking it down. All right. The villain asked if we have a pair or better, and mucks when we confirm.
Asks if we have a pair or better.
Glance shows his hand, and the villain pulls King of Hearts, Three of Hearts out of the muck.
Oh, my God.
And asks, how can you call?
Well, I think we just categorically explained why we could call.
Yeah, he didn't have the benefit of that during the game, though.
No, I know. But that's that. Wow, talk about rags. King Trey. But it was suited.
Well, you know, this is a classic thing. I get this a lot. I see it a lot now that I'm watching more of these low-limit games. That how can you call? It's almost that these players don't understand that their actions are speaking more than the size of the bet.
Yep.
You know, a lot of these people, I think, just think, hey, if I bet a lot of money, people are, oh, I can't call that. It's a lot of money. Especially those guys who are scared of monsters on the closet on Annie Up. But really, a lot of times, I mean, it's more tipping your hand off to not having anything. And you're more likely to get a call by betting that much.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing to do when you do have a good hand.
Yeah, I mean, you weren't getting quite 2-1 on your money there on a call, but it didn't matter. You know, it wasn't a mathematical situation there. It was a feel. And clearly this guy would have wanted to gotten paid off if he had a more strong hand than we had, and he didn't, so.
Well, I wonder, I mean, the lesson here, I wonder, is let's assume that our hero did have a set of fours here, right, and he played it the exact same way. Would he have gotten more money than had he played it like you normally would have had a set of fours?
Yeah, see, I just think that, there is that overshove that they try to do a lot on the river because they think...
But not just the overshove, the kind of these small, quick bets that just look like, hey, I'm just trying to bully around and I don't want too much in. I think, I mean, obviously this guy was crazy, but I think you could take what he did as a lesson in how to play a bigger hand against the same type of player that thinks about the game.
Yeah.
Not against the idiots, because the idiots are going to fold that $48 bet, but... But a good player, it's a good template to play a bigger hand, I think.
Yeah. And I guess you could go back and say if you had a set of fours, you know, on the flop betting just $4 because there's no real draw there, that, you know, he's doing it just to keep you stringing along. But also a $4 bet might scare somebody too. If they miss the flop completely, you're not going to get paid off on your big hand. You know, I don't know. It just didn't seem like this guy was... He had his, wits about him because he was drinking heavily, that he would actually calculate and think of the bet that way when he had a set. So yeah, I think he made a real good call there and really thought it out well.
All right. Well, Lance, we appreciate you sending it in. Of course, we can't send anything, but you did get redemption and a winning hand. And you've shown everybody else that if you send a hand on the weekend – you will get a wonderful piece of swag. So email it at podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
All right. Well, I want to thank my partner, Scott Long, for going to that really boring session and having a show for us today. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.